Welcome to the Not New Movie Review. This is the podcast where we analyze an actor's critical successes and losses.
All according to Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm Ross.
I'm Jeremy Wainwright.
And we have a guest today. We haven't had a guest in a very long time.
Yeah, 2 years.
This is my good friend, Tosh.
Hey, guys.
And today was a Tosh pick, which we'll get into in a little bit. But before we get to that, Jeremy, what have you been watching?
That was a very good question that I am never prepared for.
I can go first if you want.
You should. Wait, hold on. I am now prepared. All right. Well, since we last talked, the last movie we watched was Babylon AD. That fucking
terrible.
I rewatched Creepshow, the horror anthology from the 80s, directed by George Romero and written by Stephen King. It's just as amazing as always. I watched a movie called Dead Heat from the 80s
about
two zombie one detective becomes a zombie and his partner is still alive and like shenanigans ensue. I rewatched Cannibal Holocaust, an objectively horrifying and terrible movie. Watched Mayhem, the movie from 2017 about a rage virus that forces an office build. It's like Office Space, but if like the main characters got to like kill their bosses, it's pretty great. I watched a Japanese film called Tetsuo the Iron Man, which is this black and white movie from 1989 where basically a metal fetishist gets hit by a car and becomes a ghost that forces metal to grow out of a man's body. Pretty wild. I rewatched The Monster Squad. It's a classic. It's better than The Goonies.
What you say is better than The Goonies.
It's like The Goonies for people who like good movies. But
Tosh, any thoughts on The Goonies?
I've seen The Goonies in so long, but I remember it being pretty good.
Okay, I'll take that.
Maybe I need to rewatch it, but Monster Squad also has a little boy who kicks the Wolfman in the nuts, so it's pretty great. Then I didn't log it, but I watched. What did I watch the other night? Oh my god! Oh, I watched this documentary on Shudder called Horror Noir. It's this documentary about the history of black horror cinema, and it has like Jordan Peele and Tony Todd and like a bunch of other people. It was really good. It's only on Shudder though, which is a horror streaming service, but
yeah, pretty niche, I guess.
I mean, yeah, but yeah, that's all I got for you.
All right, I'll go next here. We got keeping it topical. I watched Contagion on HBO.
Tell yourself more.
Very similar to what we were going through.
We're still going through it, baby. We're not done.
I think we're very close to being done, though.
Gwyneth Paltrow got sick yet?
No, I think Gwyneth Paltrow's fine. I think Goop is fine. I think we'll be back in the Goop offices very soon.
Thank God. That's what this whole time I've been thinking. I hope Goop can get back up and running.
Then I watched Ready or Not. Which I thought it was going to be like a lot scarier than it was. It was actually more of a comedy.
Yeah. It's like a horror comedy. It's not bad.
I think it's on HBO though.
Hey, excuse you. It's called HBO Max now.
Yes. It's on HBO Max, which is actually really good. I really like it.
It is great, but just have some respect.
I restarted the OC, my favorite show. I've been watching that. Then I watched A Quiet Place.
Fun movie.
On Hulu. Never seen it before. Pretty good. I'm excited about the second one.
I'm curious to see how they make a sequel, you know.
The ending was really abrupt though.
Well, it's one of my favorites, what I call the Karate Kid ending, where it just ends where it needs to and you don't need like an epilogue, you know?
Right. Like it's just like, any thoughts on those ones?
On which ones? On The Quiet Place? I love A Quiet Place.
Love The Quiet Place. Ready or Not?
I didn't see Ready or Not.
I think you like that one. And then I watched Booksmart.
Oh,
yes. Loved it. Oh my God. It was amazing. It was great.
Yeah, I love Booksmart. It was probably like my favorite movie of last year.
Oh, it's so good.
I mean, I think I watched it on Hulu, but I'm probably going to buy it. It was so good.
I think that's Olivia Wilde's first movie, too.
I know. Olivia Wilde has a cameo in season two of The OC, which I'm watching right now.
It all comes back around.
And she also has those dumb, like, short films that you watch at the movie theater.
We will switch to Pepsi, those heathens.
Yeah, that's going to be tough when I go back. Then I watched War of the Worlds, the Tom Cruise one.
Oh.
For the first time. It was pretty good. I thought it was kind of boring towards the end, though.
Yeah, I think you're kind of boring towards the end.
I think this was when Steven Spielberg was like, I'm going to make War Horse and War of the Worlds and nothing really good again.
Yeah, goddamn horse.
Because Ready Player One, great book, terrible movie.
I think it's the opposite, honestly.
You didn't think the book was good?
The book sucks.
I think you should probably read it again.
Book is like Twilight for people who watch PewDiePie.
Just the last one I got is I rewatched The Fast and the Furious.
The OG, the original?
Yeah.
So good.
Classic.
All Tosh? Right.
Okay, let's see. Well, I went to the drive-in last weekend and I saw The Hunt and Becky, which were both perfect. No, The Hunt was perfectly fine. Becky was awful. Becky was about, it was like this little girl whose mother just died and then her dad has a new girlfriend and they go to the house so the dad can say that he's going to marry the girlfriend. But then these escaped convicts come to try and get something from them. But you never ever figure out why they're trying to get this thing. So the whole thing felt really pointless. But it did star Kevin James as a Nazi, which was fun.
That was a big selling point for me. I was like, Kevin James is a Nazi?
Huh? And then what else did I watch? I watched Sela and the Spades, which is like a new Amazon Prime movie, which is pretty cool. It's like your average high school like cliques story, but like they did a cool twist on it, so it was still entertaining. And then what else? I watched something else. I think I watched Hail Caesar for the first time. Even though that movie's like
super. I like Hail Caesar.
I liked it too. I had never seen a Coen Brothers movie before that. Which is wild.
Oh man. What's my favorite one? I mean, Hail Caesar's really good. Lebowski. Big Lebowski.
Lebowski, No Country for Old Men. Lots of good ones.
I mean, Fargo is a classic.
Funny, Ross and I actually saw Hail Caesar together, and it was great because it was us and a bunch of like middle-aged old people dying and laughing. Like they were the best audience to see it with.
So Jeremy was actually the one who got me into Letterboxd.
Yes, nice.
But how did you find out about Letterboxd?
I think I found out about it from my friends at the school, at my school's newspaper. Yeah.
The beautiful, beautiful thing.
Oh, it's great. I love it.
Yeah. It's way better than whatever IMDb has.
I like random people like, hey, guess how many movies I've watched this year? And they're always like, Jeremy, probably too many. And I'm like, let me open up Letterboxd and tell you.
It's just so simple. I don't know.
It is. It's beautiful.
So today we're talking about The Hate U Give. Which was a Tosh pick because originally we weren't going to put out an episode this week, but I discussed it with some other people, primarily my girlfriend, past and future guest. And she was like, no, you gotta, like, you have this platform, even though it's small, but you gotta use it to at least, like, help the cause, you know, any way you can. And I've already made some donations. Jeremy, you told me you plan on doing donations like that.
Yeah.
So on top of that, I mean, we have Tosh on to talk about this movie, but we're also donating the Patreon money that we have saved up right now to a black run charity.
Yeah, probably either Black Lives Matter or the I can never say the acronym, NAACP.
Yeah, and we're going to have the description of this episode is just going to be links to those charities.
Yes.
But, so, Tosh, The Hate U Give. Besides what's going on right now, why did you choose this movie?
I really like this movie. It's based on a really good young adult novel. And I think it's just like one of the best young adult novels I've read that deals with like really difficult subjects like this. I think it is very multifaceted and it deals with a lot of different angles of the issues that we're dealing with right now. I thought about like some other movies, but I think this one really tackles a bunch of the different parts of the conversation that's going on right now online. I think it really handles them well also.
Yeah, I really liked it. And it actually makes me want to read the book.
Yeah, and I really appreciate how it approaches them, but in a modern context. Like, this movie literally, like, it takes place in, like, modern day, like, whatever year it came out, you know? So, like, obviously it's tackling, like, the exact things that are relevant, like, the year it came out, instead of being, like, a period piece that could have taken place in the 90s or the 80s, you know? But, like, also in a way, like, you said it's a young adult novel. Like, I appreciate that it has the young adult approach, because I think it's a perspective that we're not used to seeing in movies that deal with these issues. And I think it's really effective in that way.
Yeah, this movie came out in 2018.
Yeah.
Directed by George Tillman Jr., who his other notable works are 2000, he did Men of Honor with Robert De Niro and Cuba Gooding Jr., 2009, he did the movie Notorious, which is the only other movie I've seen by him, and I like that one. And then he did The Inevitable Defeat of Mr. and Pete in 2013.
One of your favorites.
Oh, top three, yeah.
But,
but Notorious was good, and I think he... I can't say that he has a style, because this movie or Notorious wasn't very stylized, but I can still sense his way of like filmmaking in both of them. I can see similarities.
Yeah, he's a very like I'm trying to think of the word talented storyteller, but an efficient storyteller.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yes. Yeah. It was really efficient.
It seemed like, based on this movie, especially, like, he doesn't need to use all the flair and, like, you know, crazy tricks of, like, you know, other filmmakers. Like, you give him a good story, and he'll tell it well.
Yeah, and I actually think that this movie is probably being based on a young adult novel is probably a good like entry point for people who like. Like, so I would say someone should watch this movie before they watch like Fruitvale Station or one that like that makes it look like way worse and more real. So this came out in 2018 with a budget. It had a budget of $23 million. It has a worldwide gross of $34 million. So pretty good. But the thing is, I don't remember this movie coming out.
Well, I do.
You do?
Yeah, I do. Especially because there was actually a controversy before it came out like I think a few months. I think do you want to talk about it?
Sure. So it originally starred, instead of KJ Apa, it was this famous YouTuber at the time, but like 3 months after they finished filming it, videos leak of him using the N-word and making a lot of racist comments, just like in a 10-second video. And basically
KJ Apa is the white boyfriend.
Yes, the white boyfriend. So they basically immediately decided to fire him and replace them, and they reshot a bunch of scenes from the movie 3 months after they had finished filming it and brought in KJ Apa.
It's pretty seamless too. Like, I would never have been able to tell that like those shots were like shot outside of the initial production.
I had no idea.
But yeah.
So even though the subject matter is pretty awful, was there anything that any actors or anything like filmmaking wise, like the editing and anything that really stood out to you guys?
I will say to you first, like, I always thought that the use of voiceover in movies can be very hit or miss. Like, it can either feel like too cheesy, like, you know, like overpowering. But I think that the way that they use Star's voiceover in this movie, like, it gives the whole movie like a singular perspective that's like really powerful and effective. You know, because obviously it's based on a book, and it's hard. A lot of times, I know with books, it's hard to, especially if it's, there's a narrator in the book, like you're experiencing it through one person and like them thinking in their head. It's hard to express that in a movie. So I appreciated the way that it effectively used the voiceover, you know, and seeing her. So like, she didn't always have to constantly say exactly what she was thinking. They could cut to the voiceover.
Yeah. And I think that works in like more, not young adult, but more like teen movies more than adult movies. But I think this movie is honestly great for anyone who would watch it. I mean, I took a lot of things away from it that I hadn't even thought of. But I'll be the first to say, Issa Rae, she's got an Oscar coming her way. she's got an Oscar coming. And then there was someone else that I was like, oh, they got an Oscar coming. Who played? Oh, I mean Anthony Mackie. He's got an Oscar coming his way.
Oh my gosh, yeah,
he's great.
I'll tell you who doesn't have an Oscar coming though. Common. Common, like every time he was on screen, he did. So he has like one scene where he does his. He has like one main monologue because he's like the police chief or something of like that, and he has like this one pivotal scene where he's trying to give like the police officer's perspective on this whole thing, and he does fine for that. He gets the point across, but any other scene that Common is in, I'm not with it at all. It's he's so flat.
Common is just Common. Like, he's not, he can't be anything else.
Yeah. Have you seen that one Microsoft commercial with him in it where he's just like, Microsoft, architecture? I'm like, yeah, exactly.
I didn't think Common was too bad, but.
Well, comparatively, I mean,
he's surrounded by some all star performances, though.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, how do you say your name? Amandla?
Amandla Stenberg. Iconic.
Great! And I've only seen her as, like, a child in The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And this was the first thing I've seen since then, and, like, I mean, come on.
This is great.
Yeah, no, she's amazing. Just, like, especially in this movie, she shows so much range.
Yeah.
The entire performance. And especially when you think about, like, they did all those reshoots. Like, she did so many emotional scenes deep again after, like, way after finishing.
Yeah. Yeah, she was really good. And I honestly, I can't wait to see her in a, you know, when in like a couple years in like a in another movie.
Yeah, I wonder if she has anything out. I want to, you guys keep talking. I want to see if she has anything else coming down the pike. Because, like, if she doesn't take off after this movie, obviously it's been 2 years, but.
No. Yeah. I think she really hasn't kind of, she's kind of that still too young to be in like adult movies yet. I know she was in like one other YA novel adaptation, and she's in Lemonade by Beyonce for like a hot second.
Oh.
Yeah, but she's amazing. I think she's definitely going to do big things in the future.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, she was really good.
The actor that plays her her father, I feel like I had seen him in other things before, but he's just one of those actors that, like, he shows up in something and he has such gravitas no matter what he's doing. I think
I think you might have seen him more recently in Creed 2.
Yes, okay.
Which I haven't seen.
No, he's great in Creed 2. Yeah, he's just one of those actors. I'm trying to think of another example. There's an actor that was in If Beale Street Could Talk, too. They're like, I think Coleman Domingo. He's just one of those actors. Like, he usually only gets like the side parts or like, you know, like smaller role. I mean, he has pretty close to like a lead role in this, but like it's just always a reliable performance, you know, and especially in this movie, just the perspective that he brought to it, his character.
And then I really like that Regina Hall was in this.
Yes.
I really like where her career is. Has turned into, like, where it's going.
Have you seen Support the Girls?
No.
The movie she was in 2 years ago, and she's the lead in it. She's a manager of, like, a Hooters-type restaurant in, like, Texas. Mm. And she is so, like, it's a drama. Like, she is so good in it. So good.
Oh, okay, I see it here. Yeah, because I really like how she went from, like, scary movie, like, so dumb, to now she's, like, she's like a leading role in these mostly women led comedies and
Girls dramas. Trip. She in Girls Trip, I think.
Yeah, she's in Girls Trip.
Yeah.
She's been in Insecure.
I need to watch.
Yeah, she did that comedy with Issa Rae, Little.
Oh, with the
which I haven't seen yet, but I wanted to see it.
Man, no, I think it's a great cast. Like the whole cast. Even as I'll give AJ Kappa some. I say his name wrong, you know. Just, he's basically I only know him as Archie from Riverdale, and he's fine on Riverdale. He's pretty like actually he's my least favorite part of Riverdale because he's just like I want to be famous. It's like shut up, Archie. But he's fairly good in this.
Yeah, I think he is hard to watch on Riverdale, but like Riverdale is hard to watch because of the writing. Like it is no fault of the actors in the show. And you can tell that they like kind of hate their lives while they're there. But I think he hasn't like done anything other than Riverdale, probably because that's like such a demanding schedule. But
I've never seen Riverdale.
Oh, yeah. It's really not worth it at this point.
I'm team Sabrina all the way. So
yeah, I mean, Sabrina's definitely more. I'm just got witchcraft and stuff, but oh, I kind of like Riverdale as like a trashy like Twin Peaks. Like it's just so dumb and like contrived, and there's just murder mysteries and these teens running around this little town. And the fact that it's based on Archie comics, like he's like literally, I'm supposed to take a character named Jughead seriously.
But. So do you guys have any favorite scenes or least favorite scenes?
Oof.
I would say that my least favorite scene, and like the only scene I really think like doesn't do its job within the movie, is the courtroom scene where she's like testifying.
Mm.
I don't know why they did it the way they did, but it just seems really weird. And I also just hate like ghosts as narrative devices. is when the rest of the movie is super realistic.
Yeah,
no, yeah, that, yeah.
Is it in the book? Is the courtroom scene like an actual scene?
I don't think it is. I'm pretty sure she probably like writes some version of what she like monologues in the voiceover at that point, but I don't remember it being like the way it's portrayed there.
Yeah, that one was pretty short. It was pretty in and out for that one. And then they kind of just...
the only time that they use Khalil's ghost as a device, I think, right?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even have any precipice to, like, the rest of the movie. Because, like, you know, maybe if they had peppered it in, like, oh, every now and then. But, like, yeah, you're right. Like, in, like, just one scene, it's like, hey, she sees a ghost figure. It's like, oh, we haven't really haven't done this yet. But I guess we'll do it for this one scene. But,
yeah, I mean... My favorite scene was probably when she freaked out on her dumb white friend.
Sabrina Carpenter.
Yeah. Wait, is she a musician?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, because she looks familiar. And I recognize the name, but I don't know what else she's done.
Yeah, so quick Sabrina Carpenter career bio. Sabrina Carpenter was on Disney Channel. She was on Girl Meets World. Then she started a music career. And then this is basically the only movie she's been in, except she has one coming out like next week called The Short History of a Long Road. And then she was supposed to be starring in Mean Girls on Broadway, but that got canceled.
Yeah.
I could imagine. Yeah, no, she actually does really good because, like, from, like, the first scene, I can tell, like, I'm not a fan of this girl. I'm not.
Well, that was one of the things that I like, right off the bat, when the first part happened where she went to the private school and she was like, oh, when the white people use slang, they're cool. When I use it, I'm hood. And I'm like, oh, that... Yes, that makes so much sense. Like, that's... These people are so dumb.
Yeah.
And then it's so rewarding when she freaks out on her. Like, it's just so rewarding. Because I'm like, yes, you deserve it.
God. I've honestly, like... I've met so many girls like her in real life who, like... they want, I don't know, like, it, I mean, obviously Star explains it, like, better in the movie, like, they want to believe, like, they're like, oh, like, I'm cool with everybody, like, well, like, look at me, but then when it comes down to it, like, they don't actually want to stand up for what's right, like, they'll see the stuff on the news and be like, oh, well, that's just horrible, and it's like, well, you know, you appropriate all this culture, and, like, you listen to 2 Chainz and stuff like that, but then when it comes down to it, you don't actually want to, like, support the people that, you know, you're stealing these things from. Like, I literally work with girls like that. I get in arguments on, like, a daily basis, especially right now. Like, I try to explain, like, you know, this is, like, what's happening right now. It's more than just a news headline. And they'll be like, I think it's just a little too much. I'm like, okay, have fun at your Kendrick Lamar concert this summer. Like,
and I'm so happy that her boyfriend at the end, they found a way to basically write him out of the protest scene, because my fear, not my fear, but I could just picture when she like gets up on the car or whatever, he would like get up next to her, and that's totally not what the movie needed. And I'm so happy they were like okay, just like go, like take these people away, like you get out of here, because we don't need some kind of like white knight in this situation.
Yeah.
They do a great job of avoiding the white savior narrative. And I think it's also just funny because, like, when he suddenly becomes a much bigger part of the plot towards the end, like, suddenly he's just, like, driving his Range Rover through this poor neighborhood, and you're like, oh, wow, this is a clash.
Yeah. Yeah, the juxtaposition of that is just... Yeah.
Yeah, and I originally thought that when they went to King's house, I thought I thought they were going to get caught. And then I thought he would like, basically King would like beat him up so they can escape, like something like that, which didn't happen, but.
I mean, it would have been kind of funny to watch Archie get beat up. Yeah, I'm trying to think of my favorite scene or least favorite scene. It's a lot of powerful scenes.
Oh my God. I love the first scene too, where she's a kid and the dad is like,
oh yeah,
explaining the rules to them. Like I was immediately like, I was into it right from the beginning, just from that alone.
Yeah, I think. I mean, honestly, I was like the climax of the movie, just the whole protest scene, just watching her finally, you know, accept, you know, what she needs to, like, you know, how important her voice is, no matter like how small of a part it is. Like everybody needs to be a part of it, and just everything that ensues from that, like up until the. Well, no, my favorite scene probably is when Sekani grabs the gun, and it just like. It's like taking a hammer to the head, how powerful that scene is, just like, you know, just the cycle of violence and like, you know, it's just, that's a great scene.
Yeah.
I was at that whole scene. I was honestly like, I mean, like real world comparisons. Like I was, you know, I was thinking of like Tamir Rice, like stuff like that. Like I honestly thought the cops were going to shoot like Sekani, like, I wouldn't, like, obviously, I don't know, I'm just trying to think, like, I believe that could happen, like, that could be a reality in this movie. And the fact that the movie set up a world or a narrative where, like, I believe that could happen, like, it's just, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Especially because, like, considering it's, like, a teen YA sort of area, it's, like, very realistic versus optimistic. Like, a lot of movies would have, for this like age group, would have painted a world where the cop does get charged with the crime, or like he doesn't actually die somehow, but like they really go for the throat every single chance they get.
They really do.
Yeah, and I like that they like anyone who tried to like talk to her, especially like all the white people wanted to know Khalil's backstory, like his like drug dealing and all that stuff, and she kept bringing up like, let's talk about this cop, why isn't this cop in jail?
Which, yeah, I mean, that's a thing that we see, like you see in the news when one of those incidents happens, it's always like, oh well, you know, what was this young man's like history? What did he do? It's like, you know, what about the guy that literally just shot somebody? Like, so that part, like, that's ripped right from the headlines. Like, you see that all the time.
Yeah.
And just, and then the like a little through line that, like, I feel like it's like a YA touch, but it works like gangbusters, is the whole Harry Potter thing. Like they set it up in her first meeting with Khalil. Or not her first meet, but the scene with Khalil, and then like they bring it back up when she's talking to her dad about it, and then just that final scene where she finds his wand, like that's a prime example of like emotional setup and payoff. Like,
yeah, I love that we saw his room at the end, because like a room is like one of the most personal like things for a person. It's like your space, right? And the fact that we get to see, we basically get to go inside of his head in the end of the movie. And that's something that we don't get with all of these news stories and stuff. You know, we never see what their rooms look like.
It's also, I think it just went to show that, like, at the end of the day, he was still just a kid. Like, he just had posters of, like, his favorite musicians, of, like, you know, sports cars he wanted, like. It just hammers home the point that, like, I guess, like, to speak to it, like her dad brings it up, like, a lot. Like, people in their neighborhood, in all those terms, are expected to grow up faster than they should. Like, they're expected, like, you know, you're under these horrible circumstances. You need to, you know, man up. and like, but like you see his room and like it's literally like, you know, like anybody's room when they're a teenager, like, you know, and he's forced into these horrible life situations, like to make these tough choices, and it just, it's powerful.
Now, Tosh, just for backstory, Tosh and I went to the same high school. Now, do you have any, like, do you resonate with Star at all? Because we went to a basically white high school.
Yeah.
You were, like, one of four black people.
Yep.
In the school. Like, did you resonate with her at all in terms of, like, the people acting black? Like, or how you were treated by some people?
Yeah, no, I definitely did. I think I didn't do like as much of the code switching as Star does, because like that, I didn't have enough background in that, just like being raised in a mostly white area also. But,
right.
I think like a lot of the things that Sabrina Carpenter's character says were said to me at some point during high school.
Yeah, because I mean, a lot of, not that it correlates, but like we went to a school where like basketball was really big, like sports were really big in general. So a lot of people were like wearing Jordans. A lot of people were listening to like Drake and mainstream rap or whatever. And, and like not to name any names, just a lot of people thought that they thought they were something that they aren't.
Yeah. And like, I think to like this weird degree, like the city of Rochester was like demonized as this like dark urban place when it is like not at all. But yeah, I definitely identified with a lot of like what she went through.
Yeah, I mean, just like even in my small town, like I went to a school in a town that's very similar to where you guys went. Like your point about Rochester, like whenever someone mentions Rochester, like around me, like because I'm usually surrounded by predominantly white people, like at my job, I work in a small grocery store, and like it's like, oh, got to go to Rochester, like it's like some faraway like danger land. It's like, dude, it's like. Like 30 minutes down the highway, it's like actually super nice. like I remember my girlfriend took me through Rochester for the first time in a long time, like a couple months ago, and I was like, holy shit, Rochester is really, it's even nicer than I thought it was. Like, but it just goes to show that people, especially in small towns, like they want, it's like they look for these areas that they can be like, oh, this is the no-no zone, to put it in like child's terms. Like, I don't want to go here. It's scary because there's things here that I'm not used to. There's experiences I'm not used to. And, like, you know, I mean, that's just a big problem with small towns in general in America.
Well, it's all about perspective, right? Like, you know, like if they just went into the city to like grab a coffee,
they like would have
once a week, they would obviously see so much more than they see just like in their town, you know, that like it just gives you so much more perspective. And you bump into other people and you know, hear their stories.
Yeah, like it's like with Sabrina Carter's character, like she's probably just Carter. Like Aaron Carter, but she's probably lived in that town where her private school is her whole life, so like that's probably her, the entirety of her experiences, which doesn't excuse the way she acts, but it just goes to show that, like, I don't know, closing your life off from like other experiences like really does damage who you are and like the people around you in the long run. Like I wish I could take like everybody in my like bigoted small town and like take them on a road trip across America and be like, look at how fucking cool everything is. Like these things
The road trip, I don't think the road trip would do a lot, because you have to drive through a bunch of other small towns. I think you have to buy like a one-way ticket for them to go to like a big city. So you send them to New York for a week, then you send them to Chicago, then you send them to LA, and then
careful with sending them to New York because they might eat some like weird street meat and get food poisoning.
Yeah, that's part of the experience.
That's part of the experience. That's the only thing about New York is there's some like some Italian guy comes up, he's like, here, try it, free sample, and you're like, oh sweet. The next thing you know, you're like, oh my god, is that a hot dog?
Jeremy and I went to New York once, and
the street meat made an impression on me.
Well, yeah, okay. So we went to there was two things that were notable that happened. We went to a juice shop.
Oh god.
And I bought a juice. I wanted a juice. So I got a juice and I drank the whole juice in one sitting. I was like, oh, this is like so good. I drank the juice. And then I looked on the bottle and it was like, don't drink if you're pregnant. don't drink the whole thing within like a couple hours. So that was horrible.
In the hotel room.
Then, and then classic, some guy wanted us to take his mixtape.
Oh yeah.
This was fun.
But it's weird because we weren't in Times Square. We were in like the financial district. Mm-hmm. And this guy was just like normal guy walking down the street. And he's like, hey guys, you want a couple mixtapes? And we're like, all right. And he's like, all right, $10. And we're like, oh no thanks.
And then, walked away.
Yeah. He was like, fuck you.
That's the prime New York experience though. Some random stranger telling you to go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I guess so.
But it's also part of the experience. Sometimes we need to get told to go fuck ourselves by strangers.
He wasn't in the hustle zone. You know, there's like a hustle zone and he wasn't in it.
He probably thought, he's like, hey, everybody else is selling their stuff over here. I'm going to go over here.
You know? Yeah, I guess so.
What if his mixtape was great? What if we missed out?
It probably was great. But anyway, I'm very fortunate that I work on like Main Street of Rochester. So how do we feel about this movie? I really liked it.
It's fantastic.
I'm going to give it 4 stars. Jeremy?
As we're doing out of 5, the classic Letterboxd.
Yeah.
I give it 4, leaning on 4.5. Like, this movie is really good. My friend Sean, who lives in California, like, I remember him when this movie came out. He's a black filmmaker that lives in Los Angeles. Like, he was like telling me, like, you need to see this movie. And now I feel like an idiot for not listening to him. Like, this movie's great.
Tosh?
Yeah, I think 4.5 for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. This is a great movie. And I think look back to, I can't remember if it was Ross or Tosh that said, like, this would be a great, because of the YA aspect of a great starting point into like if you wanted to show your kids to like introduce your kids into issues, you know, to be like, hey, you know, there's some heavy stuff in this movie, but I think it's presented in a way that's digestible for kids, and then they can work themselves up to like the Spike Lee's or like things like that, you know?
Yeah. I think like the biggest thing is like throughout the movie, Star explains everything and like why everything is happening or like what it is that is happening. And I think like a lot of people don't have that base knowledge when they go to the bigger movies that deal with it more like dramatically and in depth. So I think this is like a great starter pack of knowledge.
Totally.
Yeah, I definitely think this would be a great movie for those white people in the small towns. Because it's just digestible enough that I think they would actually be like, oh, I enjoyed this.
Well, a cool thing about this movie is like you know what CinemaScore is, like it's that rating system when a movie comes out, they interview a bunch of the moviegoers like in random places all over the United States and see what they thought, and the movie gets a rating from like A to F based on what general audiences think of it. This movie got an A CinemaScore, which actually very rarely happens. So like, yeah, I think that goes to the point where this movie is like, it's a digestible movie about like real things, you know?
Now, Tosh, like they did in the beginning of this movie, were you ever given like a talk?
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
No, I don't think I was. But like I don't know, I've consumed so much media about the talk that I feel like I was given the talk at some point. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And then you go to school in Philly.
Yeah, I go to school in Philadelphia.
Which is where I am right now.
Oh wow.
I'm in Philly. But have you had any experiences like negative, like dealing with police at all?
I've like thankfully only had like very brief moments happen, but nothing like too bad.
Good.
Yeah. Like to keep it that way.
Well, hopefully with all of the action being taken, we can get some reforms in.
I mean, I'll just
maybe say, take away the heavy artillery.
It'd be ideal if like your basic, you know, cops didn't have access to things that they use in like wars. That'd be pretty cool, you know.
Or things that are like banned in war. That's wild.
Like it's like things that they won't even use on the worst of the worst, like enemies. It's like, oh, let's use those on our own civilians.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but it is like just my girlfriend and I have been talking about it a lot because she lives like closer to the city where a lot of the protests are happening, like in like Rochester and like areas like that. Like, I don't think, because obviously we've been through incidents like this before where like there's been protests, but this just the nonstop nature of this is like, it's partly tragic, obviously, because they have to protest, but it's also like it's inspiring to see just people are like, you know, like this might be the point where like enough is enough. Like we're not going to stop. Like, you know, so I think that like the best thing that we can do is that hope that this is like, obviously to feel sad for the loss of life, but also to feel hope from like just seeing so many people constantly on the streets and like, you know, donating and just, you know, it's been pretty inspiring.
Yeah. And I actually, so I was working when Rochester had their big protest, like the first big one. And I was working and I work for like a major network news organization. And so I had to work like that day. Like we didn't stop working at all. And it got scary at times because it eventually turned violent. And they were like, it was like all around our building, so it was kind of scary for me, not as scary as the people who actually have to go out there with cameras and like film it. But then I was talking with my girlfriend afterwards, and I was like, hey, like she's a person of color as well, and I was like, I'm totally fine with the protesting, but the violent stuff, or like when it turns violent, I don't see how that helps. And she was like, well, the stuff doesn't really matter. And I was like, no, I get that. Like, I don't care about the stuff being broken either, but I care about the people who own these businesses, because especially in Rochester, because we have a big Black population in Rochester, and a lot of the businesses were Black owned that were like vandalized and everything. And she was like, oh yeah, no, that's totally valid. But also it's not the people who are protesting that are doing that. It's like people who are totally, who either aren't for the Black Lives Matter movement, are just coming in and totally, like stealing the spotlight basically. And like taking it away from people who are actually making progress.
Yeah, it's one of those things where obviously in a perfect world, like obviously in a perfect world, none of this would have to happen. But like the way I look at it is that like revolutions are never easy. It's never simple. Like, you know, things are gonna get broken and burned. Like not even just like literally, but just like symbolically. Like, you know, it's how change has to happen sometimes, fortunately. And it can be scary. Like, you know, but like my girlfriend literally, cause she lives in near Rochester too. She called me and she like, wasn't so much scared that there was like violence happening, but just like, she's like, I don't understand why it's come to this. Like, why can't, like, why does the world have to be like this? And I was like, well, as scary as it is, like, you know, like, this is how change works. You know, it's sudden, it's abrupt, you know. But
so, last question. Might be obvious. Does this movie still hold up today?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that's all we got.
And we have one more important question. It's more related to the podcast, though.
Sure.
You want to ask it or should I?
You do. I have no idea what you're talking about.
What are your opinions on the movie Ratatouille?
Oh. Well, hold on. Before we get to that, Tosh, do you have any? Do you have anything else you want to say about the topic or the movie?
Just like stop watching The Help and Green Book. Just don't do it. Just don't watch them, please.
Now, is that because they're hurting the cause?
They just either A, are bad. Like, Green Book is A, just a bad movie.
It won Best Picture, right?
Yes, and I don't understand how. Like, watching that movie was one of the most painful experiences I've had. But they just, they deal with the conversation from the perspective of a white protagonist, white savior, and they just, it really works against the whole point of the narrative.
Same with The Blind Side.
Yes. There's just like a whole list, but those have been like top of mind recently.
Yeah, that was a big one. I literally, like, I remember that was the same year both Black Klansman and Spike Lee was like, because he lost Do the Right Thing to Driving Miss Daisy. And he's like, oh, what do you say? He's like, I went from the front seat to the back seat this time. It's like Green Book's all about the white guy driving the black jazz musician around, and Driving Miss Daisy's all about, I think it's Morgan Freeman driving Miss Daisy around. I've never seen that movie. I've heard it's bad, but you know, I just don't remember that whole controversy. But like, arguably so. Like, just, I remember hearing about Green Book and being like, oh, the guy that made Dumb and Dumber is making a movie about race relations in the 60s. Okay, I'm sure that'll just come and go. And it just kept gaining more traction and getting more awards. And I was like, okay, this isn't going to just go away. This and Bohemian Rhapsody are going to stick around. And then,
Such a bad year. It was such a bad year.
Well, there were so many good movies. Like,
there were so many good movies.
Oh, that was the year where, like, you know, I know it's like a big Marvel movie, but it was so cool that Black Panther got Oscar nominations. Like, that ruled. Like, obviously, like, I'm a big, like, you know, Marvel fanboy, but I was like, hell yeah. Like, if they had given Black Panther Best Picture, it might have been just like a populist choice, but that still would have been like awesome, or like Black Klansman, or like, even give Vice Best Picture. Jeez, give freaking Christian Bale in a fat suit Best Picture over Green Book.
So, Tosh, what are your thoughts on Ratatouille?
I like Ratatouille. Again, haven't seen it in a really long time, but I'm a fan of Ratatouille. That's probably one of my favorite, like, Disney Pixars.
Yes, that's what we're saying.
Remy's basically the unofficial mascot of our podcast.
I think it's not my favorite Pixar, but it's the best, I think.
Ooh, interesting. Mm-hmm. What is the best?
Or what? Well, Ratatouille is the best.
What is your favorite?
Wall-E.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Robots, space.
I love me some Incredibles. Those superheroes.
Ugh. Well, that's the podcast.
Yeah, I think this was good.
Next episode is going to be Babylon AD. Still got to put that out.
Such a bad movie.
And then after that,
Fury 7.
Yeah, Fury 7. And then we're done with Diesel.
Like, talk about movies that promote diversity. The Fast and Furious movies, those movies are incredible. There's people of all different like races in that movie. Those movies make billions of dollars at the box office. Like, you know,
and they shoot them all over the world too, which is pretty cool.
Like, instead of next time, like, obviously, instead of like The Help or Driving Miss Daisy, you should watch a movie like Do the Right Thing or like Hate U Give. But at least watch a movie like Furious 7, you know? You got Vin Diesel. You got Tyrese. You have Ludacris. You have Paul Walker. You have everybody. Michelle Rodriguez. Gal Gadot. You have who?
Gal Gadot.
No, she's dead by that one.
Oh.
Yeah. Rest in peace. But no. Just like Tosh said, be smarter with what you watch. Like, don't. There should be, like, obviously movies are made just to entertain, like, on a base level, they're created just to, like, entertain you, but also, you know, put a little more thought into the kinds of movies you watch, you know?
Yeah. Well, this has been the Not New Movie Review. Check out the links in the description for multiple charities. We're going to put more than just Black Lives Matter and NAACP. So check those out. Tosh, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
No problem. It was a great time.